And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. And ladies and gentlemen, man, we are going to get serious today. No, we ain't talking about the push to the playoffs for the NHL. No, we're not talking about Alex Ovechkin hitting 50 goals for his eighth season. We are not talking about any of that top stuff. We are talking straight up women's hockey for at least this next hour or however long we really go. And joining me to talk about all the women's hockey, because man, do we have a lot of stuff to cover. It's our good friend from the Hockey Writers, Mr. Nate Oliver. Nate, my friend, welcome back to TXHT.
As always, Michael, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being here, and I'm excited. This is going to be a great episode.
Oh, man. Where do we begin? Do we just begin with Sunday?
Yeah. Why don't you take us down that route?
All right. Let's hop down the bunny hole, shall we? Is it bunny hole or rabbit hole? Yeah, screw it. Who cares?
Yeah, rabbit hole will work.
Yeah, rabbit hole works. So... Let's put a preface to this. You were driving when this announcement was made. I had just come out of yoga class when this announcement was made Sunday morning, where the CWHL, the Canadian Women's Hockey League, announced that effectively on May 1st, 2019, which is in 1 month's time, the league will be ceasing operations, thus folding completely. Well, now... You pulled over. For what you told me in our text chat.
Oh, yes.
And I just stopped in the middle of a parking lot. Probably shouldn't have stopped in the middle of a parking lot where I could get hit by a car. But
well,
that was something we didn't expect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a sincere shocker. And hence why I had to pull over just so I could check my phone and see what exactly had gone down. I mean, from my perspective, people have talked about the concept of one league, having just a single solitary league in North America for women's hockey instead of the CWHL and the NWHL. And while I think the majority of people have long felt that that's the right path to go, I don't think anybody saw that we would be literally one league by going through these means and one of the two folding, that being the CWHL.
Well, and we'll get to certain comments made by a very specific commissioner in a little bit, but one of the key notes that came out of the CWHL statement by Interim Commissioner Jana Hefford was that the business model that they have would not be economically sustainable, which was the key reason for why they opted to fold. In an article, and I was just telling you this before I hit the record button, I was reading some articles from CBC Sports, great source of information. And there was an interview with Jana Hefford and the lady, I'm just going to call her Miss Clarkson, who was a former governor of the CWHL, who also created the Clarkson Cup and had the trophy made. They both kind of doubled down in their article, in that article that I was reading, that with a not-for-profit business model, the league just would not survive. And now there are a few other factors going into this, as well as the fact that we found out in the last 48-72 hours, which is the players, general managers, coaches, team executives, whatever, all of them in the dark when this was done. They all had apparently a call at, like, I guess 10 in the morning or something like that, Eastern time on Sunday, being told all at once, we're making this announcement that we're shutting down doors.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's crazy. You know, the fact that the Players Association for the CWHL was not involved with this ultimate decision is truly shocking.
Well, yeah, and I think what is even more unsettling to people is that the Clarkson Cup final was just played the week prior. So, you know, the Calgary Inferno, they take the cup, and in the midst of celebration and making the usual stops through the city and, you know, players' hometowns and stuff like that. And now a week later, everyone's being told that there isn't a league anymore. So it's really it kind of crazy, kind of surreal to go from this very high moment of winning the championship for the league, just hosting the league's championship, and then a week later we're being told that there is no more league. So emotionally, I can only imagine what the players, coaches, GMs, and supporting staff have to be feeling with that quick turnaround like that. It's just unreal.
Yeah, and not only that, but you know, you touched base on the Clarkson Cup itself. They had a record set for professional women's hockey viewing with 175,000 viewers for the Clarkson Cup. It was also aired on Sportsnet. Here in the United States, it was aired on the NHL Network, which was a first-time thing to ever happen. So you had all these great things for growth, and yet this still took place.
Yeah, and you know, you and I have talked before in the past. I consider myself very much an old soul and a traditionalist. And one of the things again that jumps out in my mind for that too is just the history is gone. So here's this trophy that very similar to the Stanley Cup. The players' names are engraved upon it, and because the CWHL was around for 12 years, you know, there are some great, great women's players whose names are on it. Carolyn Ouellette, Julie Chu, you know, these big names, Tessa Bonham, you know, they're in, for those that follow women's hockey closely, I mean, those are big, big names, some of the greatest that have ever played the game. And now, you know, here's this trophy that catalogs all that, and it's going to be mothballed. I mean, hopefully it ends up, you know, maybe in the Hockey Hall of Fame, in the museum area, or somehow its memory and its history are kept alive. You know, you had mentioned that you'd been in contact with Anya Badalino. One thing that's her, I mean, everybody knows Anya Badalino from her NWHL career with the Connecticut Whale, but she began her career in the CWHL, and her name's on the Clarkson Cup. So even current and former NWHL players have their names on there for all time, and now that trophy is not going to be competed for anymore.
Yeah, and I'm saying this right now, that better end up in a Hall of Fame for everyone to see.
Yeah.
And I know through going through Twitter, like people like Mike Murphy and several others that we know have come out and said, you know, we're going to make sure that everything that we've ever written about the CWHL remains in public view so people can always look at this stuff and go back and remember, hey, this happened then. You had this moment in this Clarkson Cup. You had, you know, because there are a lot of memories.
Yeah, and I think, and you would agree with me on this too, being women's hockey writers and those that care about the game, I mean, we don't want that history lost. I mean, you can look at other leagues that have existed throughout professional sports. I mean, you think of the WHA in hockey, you think of when the NFL used to be, you know, the NFL and the AFL, and now the AFL, a lot of those teams became a conglomerate into the league. But here are leagues that have come and gone, and that history is not at people's fingertips anymore. Now, I personally did not cover the CWHL on a regular basis, but I've interviewed anywhere from a dozen to 20 other players over the years, just from the women's hockey standpoint alone. And, you know, I wouldn't want their memories to fade away. I agree with our colleagues that it's important to keep that information out there, keep those stories out there so people know the women that built this league. I mean, until the NWHL came along, this was the paramount. This was the big league for Olympians and the best in the women's game to play in.
Yeah, and I will put this right now, like my entire archive of TXHT podcast, because everyone, for those who don't know, this started as a podcast. The website just opened up in August of last year, but the entire archive of TXHT is on this website. including all of my inaugural season interviews with NWHL players. If anything were to happen to the NWHL, I will personally go through that archive, listen to every damn episode I have, which is a lot, and that's a lot of hours that I got there, and I will find which ones, and I will mark them, which ones had the actual NWHL players on there. Because it's one thing me just doing like the 15-minute segment of breaking down what happened the past week and previewing the upcoming weekend. But those interviews, those are important.
Well, and you've spoken with those guests, you know, all along since day one, and you go back to, I mean, again, if even if we're talking about the CWHL, so many of the inaugural NWHL players played in the CWHL.
Kaylee Fracken,
right?
Who was just on the podcast the last time I recorded?
Exactly. So like you said, Kaylee Fracken, Anya Badalino, Hillary Knight. Even still playing in the NWHL, Alyssa Gagliardi, Brittany Ott, Jordan Smelker. I mean, these are all players that came from the CWHL, Blake Bolden. I mean, the list goes on and on. So not only have you captured their NWHL history, but you capture who they are and where they came from, and a sizable portion of that is CWHL history.
Yep. So... moving on, we have the statement that was made by Danny Ryland, the commissioner and founder of the NWHL, which was a few hours after the CWHL announcement on Sunday. One of the biggest, I'm not going to read the statement. It's up on the TXHT Facebook page. It's up on the Twitter accounts of the NWHL and stuff like that. So. But one of the biggest takeaways that I took out of that statement was the fact that there were, in fact, talks of merger back in January, and that there were going to be talks again this month that have obviously been canceled. That is a big takeaway that I took out of that, because that was something nobody knew about. But one of the things that I also kind of knew, and it's like, you know, and you and I have talked about this several times, and our good friend Shaggy, who writes and covers the Whale for TXHT, you know, we were talking about it too, and it's also the fact that you have two different leagues with two different business models talking about merging. Talk about a logistical nightmare.
Oh, absolutely. And I had written an article about it maybe a few months ago, going back, that not only from a logistical standpoint, but look, the bottom line is if one league was to happen between the two, and let's say hypothetically the CWHL was still around, somebody would have to give, something would have to give in order for them to move forward with one single league. And, you know, one model, right, exactly. And that, I mean, that covers so many avenues, and it's almost like unraveling an onion. There's so many layers to it. You know, one thing that always came to my mind when talking about this is, again, going back, what would you do with the trophies? Which trophy is the one that you play for? Do you keep the Clarkson Cup? Do you keep the Isabel Cup? Or do you start a brand new one? I mean, just simple things like that would need to be ironed out. And to your point, you know, if the little details like that, or the, you know, the semi-important details like that are hard to hammer out, how do you do it the whole two leagues as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, you got to go through every nook and cranny of both leagues and say, all right, these match up, these will work. This doesn't match up. How can we make it work? You know, it's like working a CBA between the NHLPA and the NHL.
That's a good way of putting it. A good way of putting it.
Yeah. And I work in sales, and I go through contracts, and I actually have contracts, like right now at my job, that are just sitting in purgatory. simply because it's like you got to go for all, you got to go for, people want to go for everything, and that's what you have to do for a merger.
Right.
So.
Right. And to your point, I mean, I'm sure if it had gone that route, there would need to be some type of mediation. I mean, it's obviously, you know, from you picking up on that and from what Danny had said, it seemed very much that both leagues were interested in the option of being one league. But yeah, they're not going to agree on everything. And, you know, I suppose that's only natural, but something would have had to have given.
Yeah. Now, one thing that was thrown around was, and, you know, I'm not afraid to say these names, which is Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, several others, you know, who I love reading. They're great insiders when it comes to the NHL. Lots of knowledge, lots of resources for those guys. But I'm going to use Pierre LeBrun specifically, where he says that this is the time where the NHL needs to just take over and run a women's league. To which then got eye rolls from a lot of people. And I think I heard your eye rolls all the way down here in the DC area from Buffalo in that regards.
Oh, yes. And my eye rolls, you know, and I'm not afraid to say it either, are probably for multiple reasons. One, although I do respect Pierre for what he brings, and you know, he's a premier name among NHL coverage, I would have to doubt that he's ever been to a professional women's game in his career. And it's easy for folks like that that know the game of hockey to make comments or offer opinions on how professional women's hockey should be played or orchestrated or managed. But that's just what they are. They're opinions. It's not somebody such as ourselves or our colleagues that touch the NWHL or touch the CWHL on a day-to-day basis, especially during the regular season. So part of my eye roll had to deal with that. You know what you're talking about, know your audience, and have more than just mild familiarity with it, and I don't think that Pierre LeBrun necessarily did. The other thing is, too, I mean, that's rather, I'm trying to think of what word I would, patronizing. I would say it's rather patronizing to say that, oh, here, the NHL should come in and show them how it's done and how to run this league, and they should take over. Well, you're totally discrediting the people that built this league. And I'm not just talking about Danny Rylan as being the commissioner, but there's a ton of behind-the-scenes people as well, too. Men, women of all different ages, you know, it kind of doesn't matter. But, you know, be respectful of the people that got it here to begin with. Sure, is it great to have solidarity and have support from the NHL? Of course it is. I mean, money is money and support is support if it's genuine and it's sincere. In this case, you know, what we know now, I think that it is. But still, it's a bit patronizing to make a comment like that. And I think my own feathers were ruffled, and I know a number of other folks were as well.
Yeah, and then here's the other thing. Elliot Friedman put out his 31 Thoughts article today. With his opening monologue per se, if you look at it from a comedian's perspective, you have your opening monologue and then you go into your notes. In that opening part, he talked about women's hockey. Elliot Friedman did not say specifically the NHL should come in and run things, but he did say that this is now the opportunity. There is only one professional women's league. This is that opportunity to step in and back it and help it grow.
Yes.
And that was Friedman's point.
And I can't say, I did not see Friedman's statement on it, but just from what you're saying, I have no problem with backing and I have no problem with solidarity, but it's a lot different than, you know, saying that a takeover, or even insinuating that the NHL is perfect and that they're the proper business model and the NWHL should follow them to a T. No, they're two separate leagues. If you want to offer support and solidarity, that's fantastic. I really hope that they do, and I hope that they mean it sincerely. But although they know the game of hockey, they don't necessarily know women's hockey, and they don't know the audience, and they don't know what many of these women that play in the league have gone through their years, through their lives, just to get to this place. So let's not be presumptuous here, which I think hockey experts, and maybe, and to some extent, maybe it's not their fault. It's not an Elliot Friedman's fault or a Pierre LeBrun, because people look at them as experts automatically, given their history and what they've done for the game as is. But they're not an expert on all facets of the league. And again, that goes back to my initial point, that that's what I find to be a bit irksome or bothersome, that they're commenting, they're entitled to offer their opinions, but they don't know the women's game as well as the people that have been covering it since day one and cover it practically daily.
Right. And but he also touched base on comment, and I mentioned that we were going to get to it eventually in this episode, about comments that Gary Bettman has said, where he pretty much, you know, we remember this because it was back in October when Gary Bettman came out and said that when it comes to women hockey, the league would gladly come in, but they're not going to pick sides. And, you know, he does not believe in either model of either league. And he pretty much gave, and I said this in my article yesterday, was that he gave the insinuation that both leagues need to fold in order for the NHL to come in and create their own pro league.
Right.
Women. That obviously is more irksome than what LeBron and Friedman would say. Because the commissioners essentially say, yeah, I'd like these two to kind of go away.
Yeah, absolutely. And gosh, I mean, for those of us who have grown up with hockey from, you know, the 90s onward, I mean, that's who's really been in the forefront of our faces following the NHL is Gary Bettman. And one, you know, I don't know the man personally, but you know that he sticks to his guns and has a lot of conviction and, you know, a strong personality. And again, he's entitled to feel and believe what he wants and offer up his thoughts and suggestions. But that's honestly what they are. And I think with Danny Rylan at the helm, you know, ultimately the decision is hers. And he can't force her hand one way or the other. This is a league that she started and she built with the commitment from players that also believed in the league. And, you know, that's what it's built on. So, you know, Gary Bettman can offer his thoughts and suggestions, and I'm sure she's listened to him earnestly. He's also a commissioner.
Well, we know for a fact that she's listened to him, because she's openly admitted that she's had conversations with him, which actually, I'm going to move to our next point, if that's cool by you.
Yeah, sure.
Because today there was a NWHL conference call, which apparently my invite got lost in the mail somewhere because I didn't know about it till after the fact. but I'm on our good friend Eric Wolfschlager's Twitter account right now, because he has detailed notes on his Twitter account for the conference call. So he goes, and I'm going to read through these real quick. And then obviously, and Nate, there's obviously a series of tweets that you put out yesterday that I'm going to have you read in a little bit too.
Sure. Because
I feel that those tweets that you put out yesterday are very important.
Thank you.
Breaking: the NHL has made a commitment to the NWHL, making them the largest single investor in the league. In addition, teams in Toronto and Montreal have been approved. Doors not closed on additional markets. I'm going to get back to that first sentence right there about the single investor in a moment. As revenue grows, the league will seek to grow salaries, which the league has researched this week. The schedule is anticipated to grow to 24 games in the regular season. Game day rosters may also grow for the 2019-20 season. Conversations with potential investors have increased since the CWHL announcement. The league is in conversations for potential individual ownership of teams and deals that would replicate the Buttes-Pegula package, which would be a big thing. Eric also notes that the Canadian teams may need to be rebranded. That is something that is in the works. Eric did note that he will have a more expanded thing later tonight in a piece that he'll write. And then he also goes, Commissioner Ryland was complimentary of Kim Pagula of the Foundation PSC has provided to continue to build the Buttes as a franchise. Ryland also indicated investors struggled to choose between leagues, not wanting to favor one over the other. And then I think that was the end of that for those. And then Mike Murphy, another friend of ours who covers the league, put this quote out there from Danny Ryland. I also don't want to forget the great work that Toronto and Montreal have done to build hockey in their markets. First and foremost, we're looking for a place for those players to play, but also to grow the businesses in those markets. There's been no further details will be disclosed in regards to the NHL's financial commitment investment into the league. We've heard that the NHL had been giving $50,000 to both leagues every season, and that apparently that the NHL is going to be contributing an even $100,000 to the NWHL, but that is unconfirmed at this time. So we did get some very interesting notes. We're definitely getting two more teams. We're definitely going to get more games, which is good, and it also sounds like they're not exactly ready to say that they're done adding teams.
Yeah.
I feel that Calgary's got to get put in there.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking about that the other day too.
Yeah. It makes sense. At the bare bones of it, it totally makes sense from a hockey market standpoint. That's how Calgary is obviously a vibrant and a viable hockey market. They certainly have history in that the Inferno are the reigning, or they just won the Clarkson Cup a little more than a week ago now, and they're actually two-time winners of it. So that right there, you look at history and the fact that it's Calgary and it's a big hockey town. Yeah, it totally makes sense, and I think that they should. So right now, I mean, you think the five NWHL teams, and then we've been told that there'll be teams now joining the league from Toronto and Montreal. I definitely think an eighth team should be added into there, and it would balance out the look of the league rather nicely for the 2019-20 season.
Yeah, and then also not only that, but if you remember, at the end of the very first NWHL season after the Boston Pride was awarded the first ever Isabel Cup championship, they had their little map, and they had two little dots on two Canadian cities that happened to be Montreal and Toronto. As Hannah Bevis said on Twitter, prophesizing much?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I saw that too.
So I was like, I agree with her. We should have had that like 3 years ago. But also you got to look at it from another perspective too. And you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. Shaggy and I have talked about it ad nauseum amongst ourselves. And that's this. The Buttes are owned by the Buffalo Sabres. They're the only professional women's team that's owned by an NHL franchise. The Riveters have their partnership with the New Jersey Devils, which are entering the last year of that partnership, I might add, this upcoming season. The Pride has a partnership with the Boston Bruins, although a lot of details on that we actually don't really know. We don't know how many years that's for. Connecticut does not have one, simply because they're not in an NHL city. Minnesota has a partnership with the Wild. The Toronto Furies. Am I saying that correct? Yeah.
And the Furies, yep.
Yep, and the CWHL. They have a partnership with the Maple Leafs. The Les Canadiens de Montreal, say it the right way, have a partnership with the Montreal Canadiens, and a very good partnership with the Canadians, might I add, because like, you couldn't go a day without seeing something on Twitter or social media from the Canadians promoting them.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Calgary Inferno has a partnership with the Calgary Flames. Those are the ones that, I mean, we're obviously getting Toronto and Montreal, which is great. Even though there may be a rebrand, we're not 100% sure how that's exactly going to work.
Right, and even that's not fatal either.
Yeah, that's not fatal, but at the same time, you got to figure out the logistics on that. I'm surprised they didn't announce Calgary at the same time today. I really am. Simply for that fact that those three cities in the CWHL had NHL partnerships.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we can go at it any number of different ways. I mean, a lot of it, I think, does have to do with geography, of course. Calgary is not that far off from Minnesota, and if NWHL teams are already flying out for road games in Minnesota, I mean, how much harm would it do to fly over to Calgary? Obviously, with Toronto and Montreal, it's a rather quick jaunt. I mean, I make the drive from Buffalo to Toronto multiple times, and, you know, depending on traffic and whatnot, it's about a 2-hour drive. It's even better making the drive up from New York City, Connecticut, Boston area to get up to Montreal, you know, high up north there on the St. Lawrence River. I mean, you can do it in 5 to 6 hours. So I'm sure those, not only the fact that those cities in Toronto and Montreal have the economic support, the NHL support, the fan bases, properly established teams, the fact that they're so close on the Eastern Seaboard to the founding NWHL teams works nicely for everybody. But I agree with you. I'm a tad disappointed that Calgary wasn't included. The only other thing I'll say is if Calgary is not included, and I do think we'll see an eighth team regardless. I think that there's still much hope. Yes, Pittsburgh and Detroit and Washington, D.C. I think those three cities have been eyed by the NWHL for quite some time.
I'm going to be brutally honest. I see Pittsburgh first out of any of them because – and you and I have had – again, I keep saying it, but people don't understand how much you and I really talk about this stuff behind the scenes.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is that Pittsburgh is first. You'd be a fool not to think Pittsburgh is first. And the reason for it is because of the relationship that the city of Pittsburgh and the Penguins have created with the NWHL. That relationship between the two has been built these last, 3 years now?
Right.
So to put a team in Pittsburgh is like a no-brainer at this time. D.C., and I want a team in D.C., I'm actually in a Facebook group called Bring the NWHL to Washington, D.C. It is a legitimate group. You know, I post so much NWHL stuff, and I'm so sorry to the people in the group. But this is how you get the information, you know. But but D.C. is going to get it. We know for a fact that the league is eyeing D.C. as a landing spot eventually. Actually, before this whole CWHL news dropped, I told you what I thought was going to happen, which was Pittsburgh was going to become an expansion team to make it a 16 league next season.
Right.
Then after that, they would add Nashville and Washington, D.C. That's how you get your eight teams.
Yeah.
But now, obviously, with the CWHL folding, it changes everything.
Yeah, and that was unexpected. And I'll piggyback off of just a couple of points that you made. Let's keep in mind that the NWHL All-Star Game was played in Nashville this past season. And that's certainly not by any coincidence. You don't just pick a fun city to throw an All-Star Game in. I mean, there's some sincere planning and plotting and ironing out of what could be a viable hockey market for an NWHL team. The other thing is, too, you know, you talk about Pittsburgh, and yeah, darn right, because there's former NWHL players that are from the Pittsburgh area. Ashley Vesey comes to mind, won the cup with the Buffalo Buttes. Kelly Stebman's another that have gone on record as saying...
Right, Brianne McLaughlin.
And she is too.
Yeah.
Now, I think Brianne is officially retired, but I know Ashley Vesey told me, has said to me, and I think Kelly Stebman had hinted at it as well too, is that if there were a team in Pittsburgh, they would likely come out of retirement and suit up again. And if you know that there's high caliber players that are committed to doing that, sure, it makes complete sense. The one thing that I'm fearful of, and you know, I hate to even broach it, but it's been in the rumor mill for a few seasons now, is that should the Connecticut Whale relocate in one of the places that's been talked about is Pittsburgh. And I don't want to speculate or hint that this is a likelihood. I hope that it's not. More than anything, I hope it's not, because I've gone to Whale games myself in Connecticut, and I like it there. They need to do some stuff with their arena, or maybe find a different arena to use. But I don't want to see that team lost or changed, but it could possibly happen that, you know, they may relocate, and that would throw, you know, some other options out there as well too, and some things we'd have to figure out.
Yeah. And that was something, you know, I didn't want to touch base on the possibility of Connecticut moving, because Connecticut deserves their hockey. Let's be brutally honest.
I'm with you 110% on that.
I just sent my buddy Brendan, who lives up in Connecticut. I went to that the Hartford Whalers night down in Carolina, which, by the way, is another place that could really – where an NWHL team would probably flourish because of the support that they get down there.
Absolutely.
When I was down there, I grabbed a few of those Hartford Whaler posters. I just sent one of those Hartford Whaler posters up to my friend Brendan because he misses the Hartford Whalers.
Yep.
Like, Shaggy has told me, because he's driven up to Connecticut for Whale games – and he has heard people saying to him, you know, yeah, this is the best thing we've had since the Hartford Whalers moved to North Carolina.
Yep, absolutely.
And to take that away would be devastating to that area and to that hockey market, because that market is legitimately there.
Yeah, and I want to say two things about that. One, just from my personal point of it, I grew up watching the Whalers. Being in Buffalo, I grew up at the Adams Division, and the Whalers were actually my second favorite team. And you know, it was heartbreaking when they left there. But for those of us that, you know, that love the Whalers and appreciate that, one thing that I think is so cool about going to a Connecticut Whale game is that anytime the Whales score, they play Brass Bonanza, the old goal song for the Hartford Whalers, and the fans there just love it. And What an awesome way to connect two pieces of history with, you know, the current and the current Connecticut Whale harking back to the days of the Hartford Whalers. I just think that that's the coolest thing, and I would hate to lose that. Like I said, I'm an old soul, and I want to keep things the way that they are, and I think a team needs to be in Connecticut, and it needs to be the Whale.
Yes, and we're traditionalists. We love our old school hockey.
Yes.
We're old timers, and I'm only 32 years old.
and I'm not afraid to admit it, right?
Well, you're not admitting your age, but you know.
No.
but you know, it's just. But yeah, I think if Calgary doesn't become the AVE team, it's Pittsburgh.
Yes, I would agree.
I don't want to see the Whale moved. But if the Whale get moved, say they make Pittsburgh the AVE team, it's not Calgary. And they also decide that because it's just not going to work in Connecticut because of venues and stuff like that, they move the Whale. Where would you move the Whale? Would you move them to Detroit, which would give the teams a go-between for Minnesota? Or would you make the move to D.C.?
See, I don't mean to throw a monkey wrench into the question, but I think that if the Whale do move, I think that they probably would move to Pittsburgh. And if that happened, then I would want to see – all right, we're talking about two different things. Personally, I would want to see an expansion team in Detroit. But I think the likelihood would be an expansion team in D.C.
Okay. All right. And the reason I ask that – So we're going to run off the assumption that Connecticut moves to Pittsburgh, and then the expansion team becomes the eighth team. Am I working off that correctly?
Yep, let's go with that.
All right, we'll go with that then. So no Calgary, Connecticut moves to Pittsburgh. You're saying D.C.
I think that's the most likely from the league's perspective, yes.
Now, you wouldn't go to Detroit right away simply because, even though in my opinion it would probably be a smart move to go to Detroit, I'm not going against my own interest because I do want the team in D.C. because it's closer than me. I can go to every home game. But Detroit makes a lot of sense too, because one thing a lot of people have said is to travel to Minnesota.
Right.
And if you put a team in between them and Minnesota, so like say you play a Saturday game in Minnesota, then you can play your Sunday game in Detroit and then go home.
Right.
You know, it eases some of those travel burdens for those teams. Not only that, but you might also get away from the idea of having the Minnesota Whitecaps not play for a month.
Yeah, and I'll make two comments on that both tie in. So, one, Detroit is almost the same thing as Pittsburgh, is that there are former players, Sarah Shurub and Kalen Troka are two that come to mind, former NWHL players that are from the Detroit area, that I'm sure, in fact, I know would love to play in the league again if there was a team closer to home. So if there was a team in Detroit, you can bet the ranch that that players like that would be on board with that, and that Detroit is a strong hockey market in and of its own accord. The other thing is, too, and you bring up a really good point with what you said about the Whitecaps virtually being off from league play for an entire month. I mean, I know they played some college teams and things like that, but they didn't play any NWHL opponents for a month. Is, yeah, if the NWHL schedule is being expanded to 24 games apiece, you're not going to have that luxury. You can't take a month off and still expect to fit in 24 games. There's going to be a lot more traveling just in general that's going to have to happen. And it begs the question then, too, are we just going to have weekend games still and prolong the season, maybe start a little bit earlier and have it go a little bit later? Or do we start to see some weekday night games here and there, too? I'm not sure at this point.
I mean, we've seen a couple Friday night games this past season. I'm open to more Friday night games.
Yeah, I would be as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely more open to Friday night games. I would love to see a lot more. Like, they do a lot of Sunday games. I'd like to see a lot more Saturday games. So yeah. I like to see an expansion of more Saturday games. I would love to see Friday night games. You know, I think it would be a benefit to them if they did it that way. I mean, obviously, you're not going to be getting to the point where you're going to be having them play like almost 7 days a week like it is in the NHL, where it's like the Capitals played yesterday, they play on Thursday, then they play on Saturday, then they play on Sunday, then they play on, you know, Tuesday, you know,
right,
where, you know, you can essentially play every day of the week. We're not going to be there yet with the women. But growing more Saturday games and also doing these Friday night games would be a great way to start.
Yeah, and again, there's so many layers to this that, you know, I almost feel that that we should have some type of like a town hall meeting for everybody that covers the league or is involved in it to some capacity, because there's a lot of things to consider. So, you know, one of the other items that you'd mentioned when you read Eric's tweet was the discussion of salaries going up. Well, if salaries are going up, I think there needs to be other, you know, specifics that go into player contracts. And, you know, I'm not privy to what any of the contracts currently say, but, you know, it makes me wonder to what extent are the players held to a particular level of expectation. You know, if they're signed to a contract, who mandates what days that they play? Is that spelled out anywhere? I'd be curious to what the NWHLPA has to say about it, recognizing the fact that most of the players have 9-to-5 jobs outside of their hockey careers, and to what extent can they travel? Can they play a weekend full of games, if not, you know, tossing 3 games in there, however they're able to orchestrate it? I mean, there's just so much that needs to be discussed and figured out in a relatively short period of time. I mean, we're already into April now. CWHL will cease operations on May 1st. And before you know it, summer's here. There's really only a handful of months to get this all squared away before the 19-20 season starts up.
Yeah, and then also not only that, but to put this into perspective, you mentioned like the travel, the stuff in the contracts. Keep in mind, there's a reason why certain players on the Riveters and the Buffalo Buttes didn't come to Minnesota for the final weekend of the season. And you nailed the bullet on the head. 9-to-5 jobs, because they aren't right. making a living salary playing hockey yet.
Right, right. And that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to touch base on real quick. There was a line that was said about the NHL being the biggest investor in regards to revenue. That actually has me asking a massive question. How much are they really putting into the league? How much did they agree to put into the National Women's Hockey League? Because right now, from my understanding, and I could be wrong, the biggest investor into the National Women's Hockey League is Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
To my knowledge. And again, yeah. I can be wrong. And it may be something or somebody else that's a bigger investor than Dunkin' Donuts, but to my understanding, it's Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, and I did see, I can't remember who sent the tweet out, but I saw discrepancies between what was being said. There was a few that clearly stated that the NHL is now the top supporter. But then I did see one tweet out there, and I'd have to go back and look for it, but that said that the NHL is second highest. So I would assume that if they are the second highest, then Dunkin' Donuts would be number one. We also are not necessarily privy to who their other financial backers and supporters are. I mean, there's hints out there based on some of the, you know, information that does get tweeted or shared on social media from the league for different companies that might be backers to a more modest extent. But it does make you wonder who are the top dogs in that respect and who's really giving the league what it needs to be sustainable.
And I wouldn't be surprised that the Pegula family is in there.
Yeah, it would make sense. Yeah. You know, being in Buffalo, I get to see it probably more often than not. And, you know, here, there's a common hashtag that you've probably seen, but it's also a phrase in a store that one Buffalo is what they say. And it's all about not only just our city sports teams, but just being there and caring for one another and being good neighbors to other people. But, you know, the Pegulas, not only do they own the Buttes and the Sabres, but they also own the Buffalo Bills of the NFL and the Buffalo Bandits of the National Lacrosse League. So they certainly have the deep pockets to be supporters. And you had mentioned, I think, before we got onto the show, about Danny praising Kim Pegula, who really runs the sports business operations of Pegula Sports and Entertainment. And, you know, there might be some indicators from there.
Kim is the one that sits on the board of governors for the NHL.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, she's the one that represents the Buffalo Sabres. But yeah, it's just, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy. I mean, and here's the thing, and I'm going to read this tweet from Madison Packer of the Metropolitan Riveters real quick, because I think this is the perfect time to make this announcement. So Madison Packer did a tweet, which you retweeted, then I followed suit. Super happy for the news coming out of the NWHL and NWHLPA today. However, Anya Badalino will be unavailable for comments or conversation until after I am finished kidnapping her for our patiently awaited vacation to Hawaii. Be back next Wednesday. Ladies and gentlemen, originally, the game plan for this episode was to not only be you, Nate, but also Anya Badalino. I was told about the Hawaii trip yesterday. So, when Anya comes back, I'll probably wait till sometime after they're back, like a few days. Anya and I are going to reach out to each other, and we're going to set up her episode to get her comments on everything that's been going on, especially the fact that, you know, retired NWHL and CWHL player, current director of the National Women's Hockey League Players Association, Anya is going to be a great source of knowledge, and it'll be great to have her back on the show.
Oh, yeah, and that's a show that I know that I personally won't want to miss, and I think anybody who cares about women's hockey would not want to miss either. I mean, Anya is so passionate and so vibrant, truly cares and just bleeds the game of women's hockey, but she can speak from experience. She her name's on the Clarkson Cup, you know, from her time in the CWHL, and she was an inaugural member of the NWHL, so she knows her stuff. So not only is she passionate and sharing it, but she knows what she's talking about. And again, kind of going back to some of the comments that we were talking about with Pierre LeBrun and Elliot Friedman, although I respect both of those gentlemen and other people that, you know, they're entitled to have opinions about how things should be done. Anya's a person that has been front and center because she cares so much about this game and about this league. She's going to give a really good show.
Oh, yeah. And also, she is in the archives.
Yes.
Good luck searching. Well, you can't blame me. How many episodes have I done? I've done over 150 episodes.
Wow.
So it's like, you go try to find the descriptions. Go to my Facebook page and find them. I dare you. I double dare you. but no, I'm super excited to get Anya back on. I'd love to talk to Danny Ryland, but, you know, she's the commissioner, and I'm probably sure that she has more important meetings than talking to some schmuck podcaster who had his conference call invite lost in the mail. So, but, because it would be really cool to get Danny's perspective on things.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's a lot of different people that you could reach out to. And I think the fact that you're going to be talking to Anya is huge. And I know recently you had Kelly Fracken on the show. She's another one, you know, that played in both leagues and, you know, as an inaugural member.
She won the Clarkson Cup her only time in the CWHL, then went right to the NWHL and won the Isabel Cup with pride.
Yeah. And that's great. And I think, you know, what will be interesting to see, will be very interesting to see, is that now that Montreal and Toronto are going to be in the NWHL, is what players will end up with those teams. So another part of that conference call or the information that came from it is that, again, there's going to be NWHL free agency where players are not tied to a particular team that maybe drafted them or had them under contract this past season.
Have they ever had restricted free agents?
I don't believe so. I do think that if I'm remembering correctly,
I don't think they've ever been restricted.
I think there's something early on about draft picks, maybe just with the second season, but I could be wrong about that. That just sounds vaguely familiar
to me. The only thing I can think of is probably after the first season going into the second season is that players were restricted to the teams that they had originally signed with up until a specific date. So it's like if you didn't re-sign with the team that you played with, then you became just an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, but yes, and I think you're right. I think that sounds familiar, but you know it'll be interesting to see. You know, to that point, it'll be real interesting to see who ends up going to Montreal and to Toronto. I mean, if you'd have to hazard a guess that player, like superstar players, the best in the world, like Hillary Knight and Marie-Philippe Poulin, who had just played for Montreal, that's who that they would sign with, that they would go back there. At least you would hope so, that they would have a strong team right off the bat. You know, talking too about draft picks and teams that they play for, I mean, we still see, even this season, there was plenty of that where, you know, it had gone astray to some extent. I think of Denisa Krizova comes to mind. You know, she was originally drafted by the Connecticut Whale in 2017 in that draft, and she ended up signing with the Boston Pride. So I guess free agency definitely gives them, the players, the ability to go with the team that will work best for them in terms of, you know, those 9-to-5 jobs that we talked about, and geography, and being able to, you know, live a place that they're comfortable. So I'm eager to see who ends up where. The other thing is too, which wouldn't be surprising, is I think of like our Canadian players that are in the NWHL, like a Kelly Babstock. Part of the reason why Kelly Babstock left the Connecticut Whale after being with them for 3 seasons and signed with Buffalo was it was closer to her hometown in Ontario. Well, now you have the Toronto Furies. Does she end up signing there? Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of interesting things to consider like that.
Shannon Sabatis.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the best Canadian goaltender out there.
Right.
So you know, that'll be interesting.
Sure. And again, like, okay, so Shannon Zabaras, she actually lives in Ohio, but okay, so let's say an expansion team does go to Detroit. Does she sign with Detroit? You know, I mean, there's so many questions out there that I think the fact that at least 2 more teams are going to be in the league, players might want to play closer to home, certainly just have family and friends come and see them play professionally. You know, do they sign with teams, and I'm talking namely the NWHL players that didn't have an opportunity to sign in Montreal or Toronto, do they go there now because it's closer to home? You know, I guess I'm wondering things like that.
And I'll throw this little nugget out there, because you mentioned how DC is like near the top of the list to get an NWHL team.
Right.
Haley Skorupa, Sam Walter, Kaylee Fratkin, Alexa Grushko, all have ties to the D.C. area. Obviously, you know Haley's from Rockville, Maryland. Sam is from Annapolis, Maryland. Alexa Grushko played for the Washington Pride, who I recently did PA announcing for. And Kaylee Fratkin has ties to the D.C. metropolitan area.
Yeah, I mean,
so let's throw those little nuggets out there for the DC fans.
Well, and it makes sense. It really does. I definitely think geography is a major factor because of the fact that the players can't, at least right now, earn a livable wage just from playing hockey. So if you can't, you know, you're not necessarily going to go to Calgary, or you're not necessarily going to go to Montreal. You're going to sign somewhere close to home where you're going to be around family and friends. And, you know, maybe if you're not able to work full time because you're playing hockey, maybe you can stay with mom and dad for the season or different options like that. I mean, I know with here in Buffalo with the Buttes, there's plenty of Buttes players that are roommates. And that's been the case for years that, you know, they live and work in Buffalo, or at least live in Buffalo, but they stay with their teammates in a house or an apartment. And it's just what the players have to do to make ends meet. So geography definitely plays a role in it. It absolutely does.
I definitely know that, especially the first season, you always heard about the Riveters doing that in New York. The first season was played in New York. I believe it was played in, like, what, Brooklyn or something?
Yes.
Yeah. And then they moved over to Newark, New Jersey. But even then, they still did do the roommate thing.
Right.
And I think you still hear stories about players being roommates with each other. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, and understandably, it's what the players have to do to make ends meet. The other thing, and again, I don't mean to linger on it, but another thing that I think is worth mentioning is what it will mean for now. All right, so you had these 2 leagues. There's 6 teams in the CWHL and 5 in the NWHL. and now there's less across the board for everyone. Where do people sign? It's interesting because I think of, like, I'll give you an example, Haley Williams. So Haley Williams is an original Buffalo Butte. Tried out for the team after the first season. She tried out for the team two more seasons, I think maybe even three, after that first year with the team. Didn't get signed by the squad. She went and played for the Markham Thunder for one of those seasons, yep, and went and played for the Toronto Furies for the other. So it was kind of a good way that players that if they didn't make a team in one league, in one of the leagues, either the CWHL or the NWHL, they could always go and try to get on a team in the other league. In most cases, it worked out. But yeah, and then that's Haley not going to be the case.
And Haley went to Russia this year.
Yes. She's playing in St. Petersburg right now.
Yep. I actually have her jersey from the inaugural season with the Buffalo Buttes.
Nope. See, there you go. Yeah.
I also have Nana Fujimoto's.
Oh, that's a great one to have, too.
Yep. But before we end this, you did a series of tweets that myself, Erica Ayala, and several others applauded. Please read that to everybody, because it's a message that needs to be put out to everybody.
Sure. So here's what I said. I don't know if anybody else has said it or thought it, but the other thing that people need to remember about the fold of the CWHL is that even if 2 to 3 teams are assimilated into the NWHL, there are a limited number of roster spots. Players on the periphery who may be healthy scratches for their team or an extra defender may now be out of a job due to the influx of professional players trying to find a team. The CWHL players are impacted first and foremost, but be cognizant of the impact that this will also have on current NWHL players. That's not even counting the players from college or university looking to make the jump to pro. There is literally one league now in North America and a very large number of players vying to be a part of it. With the end of the CWHL, it becomes practically tenfold the number trying to make it. Not everyone makes a roster, and with one league that is currently at 5 teams, of course now we know it's 7 teams, the competition to make it is greater than ever. I'm feeling saddened for all the players impacted by this. The ripple effect stems far wider than what most are realizing. But I stand true to my thought. There is no coincidence, at least not when it comes to serious matters. Everyone who has a love for women's hockey, it'll be okay. It really, really sucks right now, but we have each other's backs, and we'll make this work out in the end. So make no mistake, if you care about the women's game, then your support, positive energy, and commitment can be a part of righting the ship. There are far too many good people involved in women's hockey for things to fail. Not on our watch.
That was beautiful, man.
Thank you. And it's from the heart, and it's true. I know. I think that was maybe the hardest thing to see, but also the nicest thing to see when the news came out that the CWHL folded. It was hard for a lot of people. I mean, I can't even imagine being one of the players that played in the league. This is no matter what business model or what people thought about either league, there's players that played their hearts out representing a city, representing a team, wearing their team's colors. And now suddenly that's gone. I mean, your team does not exist anymore. Your league does not exist anymore. That is a huge pill to swallow. And a lot of people are rightfully and understandably hurting right now. And they're gut-wrenched and heartbroken over it. But if you look at the positive side out of it, it was nice to see the solidarity of everybody feeling that way. We're all hurting right now. The people that care about women's hockey and love the game, we're all in this together. If you really love it and really care about it, and I know, Michael, you certainly do and have for a long time, and most of our friends and colleagues do. And it's just something, it will be okay. I know everybody's hurting right now, but it will get better. This is just one step in the process, and I think if we're all committed to this and doing the best that we can to promote this game that we love, then it's going to work out in the end. And it's understandable that there's bumps and hiccups along the way. But the end product and what we've all been striving for, it is going to come to fruition.
And to piggyback on that before we end it is, At the end of the day, hockey is hockey. It doesn't matter if you're male, female, transgender, lesbian, gay, straight, black, white, Asian. It don't freaking matter. Hockey is hockey at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Damn, we're trying not to cry now.
Well, and it's serious. I mean, you know, it's okay to feel emotional about it. It's really some emotional news. And I meant what I said, too. People need to be aware of the players that might not be able to play in this league anymore, that might not find themselves a contract. That's got to be scary. It's got to be heart-wrenching. You know, I think of some of the we'll call them the black aces, to use a common expression for that. But I think of some of the black aces that played for the Buttes this season that maybe only got into one game or didn't see any game action, but were at all the practices and made the trips with their team. I mean, those players, they might not be on the roster next season. That's something that they're going to have to, you know, reconcile in their heads and in their hearts. And, you know, it's not an enviable position to be in. And I guess my thoughts kind of go to those folks right now.
Yeah. Pretty much, it's like it comes down to the thing where I just said, hockey is hockey at the end of the day. It's pretty much, you embrace your brothers and sisters and you go, it's going to be fine. We got your back. It sucks, but we'll be there. We got hockey.
Yeah.
And we're going to play it, and we're going to love it.
Yep.
So with that, we're not going to blubber anymore. Nate, where can the people find you on social media, my friend?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Nathaniel A. Oliver, NathAniel, letter A for my middle initial, OLIVR. Wasn't enough room to fit in the E, but that's where you can find me.
Gotta love Twitter for that stuff. And of course, you can follow everything TXHT by going to TXHTHockey.com. I actually have a couple appearances coming up. Gotta throw these out there. I found out this morning that this weekend, my episode that I recorded last month with Mike Jones of DC 101, What You Playing, will be airing this weekend. So I will share that out when that's released. This Thursday, I'm doing Awesome Mania. We're doing our TakeOver and WrestleMania predictions. Oh, yeah, dig it. Sorry, I had to get a little Macho Man Randy Savage in there. We'll be live on Twitch, I believe, at 10 p.m. Eastern time. That'll be twitch.tv/321_TV. And then I'll be at AwesomeCon at the end of the month. So I got some things coming up.
Busy man.
Yeah, I try. but with that, TXHTHockey.com, that's where you get to get everything hockey, serious hockey talk, serious hockey fans. And again, we want to close it on this note. It sucks, but ladies, it's only going to get better for you. It's only going to get better. Nate, thanks again for coming on, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, we will see you on the ice.